Hi, Internet. Welcome back to Nerd Roots. I'm Kia.
And I'm Ben.
And we have not changed. We are still Kia and Ben like we were last time. But we have a different guest with us today.
Yep.
We're going to tell you all about him right now. He's sitting to my left. His name... Well, let's do his name last, because I think that's more fun when you sort of, like, you don't want to spoil it.
The holiday break
Shh, don't talk! You're ruining the suspense!
I know, this dulcet baritone is so identifiable, the world knows immediately who it is.
Everybody out there by now knows it's Robert A.K. Gagneau. The one, the only. He's a theater director, he's an actor, he's a sound designer up here in New York, and he's also the host of the Go See a Show podcast, which is all about shining a light on off-Broadway theater? Is that how you would describe it?
Word. I should steal that credit of shining a light on the off-Broadway
theater. We've done that a lot of times with our guests. We make up our credits on the spot.
Yeah.
And then people have always been like, wow, I should use that. And I'm like,
that's how you should relabel yourself.
I'm probably going to use that at some point.
Wonderful.
Why don't we come up with taglines for a living?
Let's change ourselves to nerd tags or
if
tag
this
roots.
Podcasting thing doesn't work out,
right?
You know,
then we can start up our own little company, just naming stuff and tagging stuff.
Anyways, Robbie, everyone,
woo! Clap, stoked to be here on the other side of the mic. This is really weird.
So yeah, this is your first time on a podcast that is not your own.
Yeah, exactly.
That's got to be exciting.
It's a little. I mean, I've been a voice on Distilled Theater Company's podcast.
Okay.
They do radio drama,
mm-hmm.
but never like, hi, I'm Robbie. How you doing?
Yeah.
Let's talk about me.
You had lines that you knew were going to say back then, yeah.
Yeah, we sort of knew, I guess.
Somewhat. Oh. So not exactly like...
I'm not exactly
off the cuff.
Yeah, I'm not good at improvisation or remembering lines either, so...
Get out!
Wow. So you just do like a hybrid. Like, this is what I'm going to talk about.
I think this is where this should go at the moment, question mark.
Great. So we've got you on. We've had a lot of different types of nerds on the show, and you and I have spoken kind of briefly in the past about role playing games and like Call of Cthulhu and all that Lovecraft stuff, which I know you love. But you're also a lot. I want to talk just a little bit first before we get into that like real heavy deep nerd stuff. A little bit about
The deep nerd stuff.
Well, that's like, you know, that's sort of your typical RPGs. That's out there. Everybody knows that's nerd stuff.
Before we lose you guys.
but I do want to talk a little bit about, because you're kind of a theater nerd and a music nerd, because you're really, you know, you really love working with sound design. Robbie and I know each other from a play that he directed that I was in.
And then one I directed that you wrote.
That I wrote, that's right.
Which
were
awesome.
Both very heavily music inspired.
Is that the shots I saw?
That is the shots that you saw.
Oh, you came to graduation day?
Yeah.
No, he came to the
know.
Punk one
oh,
that
man.
We did together.
That's still one of my most, my favorite pieces that I'm most proud of, I guess.
So we should explain the idea behind this to the listening audience. Not in too much detail, but basically every month this program that we're involved in, Shots, they do 6 short plays where the writers have 2 weeks to write, actors have 2 weeks to rehearse, and then we just do them all in a night. First Monday of every month, and one month the theme was punk rock, and you just like jumped on it with me, and you're like, yeah, let's do punk rock together. Fuck yeah.
Well, and I think who really made that piece, other than you guys crushing it on stage, was our playwright David Hahn.
He did a great job.
Who just grabbed this idea of punk, and where, you know, I think the standard way, and what everyone else did, and I, you know, it was great. All of those pieces were awesome. But they're all about punk, and David tried to write a punk rock script, and that to me he sent me this script, and it's written like an EP. He's got 3 sections. They don't seem to really connect at first read, and he asks for everything from an onstage root canal to human beings being stapled on stage, and then there's this almost seems like a series of just rants about like what is punk and what isn't punk, and so the piece itself demanded creativity, and the actors rose to it, which was phenomenal, and I just got to play around and make a little soundscape and say, like, you guys go crazy.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. And so you, as we can tell, very much love the music world, specifically punk rock, but you're big into... You play a lot of instruments as well, right?
I fake play a lot of instruments.
Okay,
I can... I'm serviceable as a rhythm guitarist, and I can sort of play the trumpet, but and I can fake mandolin. I've done that on stage.
Fake mandolin?
Yeah. Like, just kind of, like, yeah. I can play chords and make it sound like I know what I'm doing, sort of, yeah. But...
fake it till you make it.
Yeah, yeah, some Chris Thiel style shit, that ain't happening. But, yeah, no, it's fun to integrate music into theater.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I feel like, I think aurally, so, hence I do a podcast mm-hmm. about theater.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, and why you got into that, and what it's all about for you.
So, Go See a Show started because... I was coming to the tail end of my tenure as an arts administrator with this company, this musical group that's just unbelievably good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great gig, but, you know, there's something for me, I think, maybe revealing too much here, but, like, about being an arts administrator where you can't actually be an artist at the same time, mm-hmm. which was sort of... soul-crushing is maybe too strong, but, like, it really feels... it's hard. It's, like...
Yeah, I've always heard that. If you want to work on stage, you shouldn't work behind stage, backstage.
I think it's important to know how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
And to always have a... like, I love having a hand in the tech world and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
I really wanted to direct, and, you know, it was a different world. Yeah, it was music, but I would be with these people that are some of the best musicians to this day that I've ever heard or met, and they're just lovely people, and... I would always feel like, man, they're getting to do what they always want to do. They're on stage at Lincoln Center. We're on stage at Miller Theater. We're on stage at these great places. I want to be doing this with what I make. And so I made the decision to leave there and, of course, get the even more soul-crushing job of working in a restaurant. But on my way out, I decided, you know, I also love, like I said, sound. I like music. Yeah. And I like voiceover. I was trying to take my first tepid steps into the world of voiceover.
Yeah.
And somebody at some point had told me, it's just like anything else, you know, you got to make your own shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, well, what if I made a podcast? I could just, I paid like, you know, the $30-$40 to register the domain name and have hosting and said, I'm going to make this podcast about theater. I'll interview people I know. We'll talk about independent theater. Nobody else is doing that. And then when somebody says, oh, you do voiceover? I could say, yes, listen to my podcast.
Yeah,
you
perfect.
Can hear me here. So... it all started, we were talking about sound quality a little while ago with your podcast, and you have this excellent mic going on, but you said, like, you made the leap from a lower quality mic.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
My first gig was with playwright Mariah McCarthy. She was directing a show that a couple of friends of mine were in The Fringe, and I didn't have anything, so I was like, well, I have this iPhone. So I met her after a show outside of Swift Bar on East 4th Street, and, you know, noise of East 4th Street going on in the background, but we recorded the interview. It's not the best quality audio, but it worked. And,
yeah, it worked.
We
sometimes you need
podcast.
That, like, you need that city ambiance sometimes.
Yeah, you know what?
I still do a lot of my interviews, like, in the park, on the street, wherever.
That's great.
And it sounds, I think it adds a level of, like, kind of like what you guys do, this, like, audio verite. Like, we're just, we are literally just sitting around Ben's apartment having a beer and talking, so that's kind of cool.
Every now and then you get to hear a siren coming by to know that we're real people.
This is really the Lower East
Side.
The
best is when there's construction happening.
Oh,
that was great.
Amen.
There's two where it's just like, there's a drill right
and
outside.
They came at really interesting points in the podcast.
Yeah.
I remember, I listened to the first, I think, 5 episodes. And you guys had, there was like I love podcasts. Like, if I'm actually a nerd about anything, it's probably podcasts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This whole podcast revolution makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Anyone can just produce anything
super
like
happy.
We're doing right now.
It
yeah.
feels like this, it is, it's the new radio, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the new way to, like, listen to stuff on the go in headphones, listen to people talk, listen to, like...
and to get super niche about things, like,
in some ways,
forgive me if I get too, like, high concept here. But
no.
Like, in some ways, the internet did this thing where we have everybody can kind of dig into their own little pools, and nobody swims in the same large ocean.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from cultures to subcultures to, like, subcultures.
There's never
going to
be another
Beatles
because, like, nobody's listening to everything on the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, now it's like, I think I'd like to know what nerds in New York City are thinking of. I'm going to subscribe to Nerds.
Right,
no matter where you are in the world, I mean, so I've had, there's a kid in, like, I think he's in California, who just kept emailing me about Go See a Show. And I was like, this is awesome. This kid's just, like, super jazzed about theater. He's a freshman in college, and he wants to know what's going on in indie theater in New York City.
Nice.
My podcast helps to fill that. It's just, I think that's really awesome that we have
the world is just one big collection of subreddits.
That's all. That's all we are.
That's all it is. Just a big collection of subreddits now.
At least they're not all our space dicks.
Yeah. Everyone's accidentally clicked on that one.
I've still avoided it. I still have missed it.
Well then,
I
let
don't
me
know
pull
what's
up.
There.
No,
no,
I don't think we need to do that.
Bad plans.
No, yeah.
I know it's a place not to go. And I'm going to keep it that way.
There are a lot of Reddits where you should go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I guess what I... One thing we always talk about is, like, you know, this thing with being a sound engineer and being able to listen to... Being very orally focused, like, where do you think that came from in your life? Is there anything you can think of in your childhood where it was just like...
Or how young were you when music really started connecting with you?
This is nerd roots.
That's right. We're going
to
go back.
Roots. This is the roots part of it.
We're going to go back.
This is going to be a little traumatic. Let's go to... I think I was in the fourth grade, told my mom I wanted to play an instrument, and she's like, okay, that's fine. You sign up for instrument lessons at school. And ended up playing the trumpet because I wanted to play percussion, and they said there's too many percussionists. You have to learn something else first, and then we can move you to percussion. And I said, trumpet? Oh, that one's got three valves. That's pretty easy. No, that actually makes it infinitely harder. But, you know, fell into that playing, and I really enjoyed it.
What made you decide you wanted to play an instrument?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you that. I've, you know, I grew up listening to, even now, like, I listen to a lot of music, and I really enjoy consuming music in the sense of, like, learning more about, like, I'd rather listen to something new often than be, like, stuck in a same kind of rut.
Yeah.
So, I really enjoy just kind of, like, getting into new stuff and learning what else is out there. So, where that came from, I honestly don't know. Nobody else in my family really has that, excepting my uncle, who I think sort of helped to start that with introducing me to rock and roll. I grew up on country.
Wow.
From upstate New York, border to Canada. There was a local alternative station that I didn't listen to. I remember the day Kurt Cobain died, everyone on the bus talking about it. I'm like, who is that? I didn't know who he was.
Who is this guy?
Exactly. They had to explain to me. That betrays my nerdiness. I was even on the outside back then. But from there, it was just kind of like, you know, learning about classic rock the way I think a lot of people of our generation do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, The Doors, you get into all this stuff, and then everybody in high school's into it, and so everybody kind of has that same vocabulary. Got into stuff like, fell into the first, like, venture into, like, anything outside of that, into the new world of music, was via bands like Bush in 1996. So, I mean, I came to 16 Stone super late, but I remember getting that record, hearing Everything's End, and thinking, oh shit, what have I been missing out on?
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, it blew my mind. And it's sort of embarrassing to say, like, 16 Stone was the record
that was
a gateway, but it opened up all these doors, and I started, like, getting into...
I can kind of relate to that. Yeah. Because I grew up with foreign parents who always listened to Iranian music, and so I never...
Your parents were foreign to you.
well, no, it's not that they were necessarily foreign to me, but they were...
Wording.
In the way that all parents are
well,
foreign.
Well, you know, but they did represent a very different culture than everything else that
then
I was
what's
around
you
and
my parents are foreign down.
And so I never I never really went out on my own and found other music to listen to. I never really listened to the radio.
What
until,
was your gateway then? What kind of opened you up to other
gosh
stuff?
At some point I don't remember. I think honestly it was MTV. When
I didn't
get
cable, so I couldn't do that.
Right, and I got cable when I was in 7th grade, I think. And so I kind of started hearing some stuff, didn't really care too much for any of it. And then I think bands like Lit and Blink-182, like those kind of cheesy stuff that
is
a little embarrassing.
That's
to
so
yeah.
cute.
I am definitely a 90s
but
child.
But that's
though.
Like
that's
the
like
place,
what,
yeah, that... That's what was big and what you could get into.
Right, and so little by little, it's like, okay, it helped me dig deeper into other stuff that's like, and, you know, you're like, oh, this is actually what's good.
And got you to the point where you could host something like Nevermind the Bollocks Hair Shots.
Yeah, and do a whole show about punk rock. which is...
That wasn't about
Blink
182.
I've had, like, I had a really weird exposure to music that always made, like, my listening, my music choices as a kid super weird. So my mom... both my mom and dad are super musical, and my mom, she toured with, like, the Philippine National Choir.
Awesome.
All around the world. And she did that, but, like, we would always watch, like, old musicals, like, old movie musicals,
mm-hmm.
like West Side Story, and, the one that I always watched repeatedly was Guys and Dolls, the one with Marlon Brando and all that fun stuff. So I listened to a lot of Broadway at, like, a really young age.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also listened to, like, a lot of classical singers. Like, the one that I always remember, there's an album of the King Singers. I don't know if you guys know the King Singers.
No,
they're,
no,
like, this
familiar.
British group who do, like, children's stories, but audio. And this is when I'm, like, seven.
Right, right.
And
no
Judy Dench narrates it. I remember it so
well. Boss, that's amazing.
It's so amazing, where Judy Dench is, like, narrating Humpty Dumpty, and then you have these guys who are really...
I
want to
find that.
You should find it. It's great. These guys...
Ben usually put in, like, the audio clips and stuff in the
middle.
That's
a good one to put in.
Definitely put in some of that.
I will put in Dame Judy Dench.
That's incredible.
Narrating Humpty Dumpty, and, like, it's so great.
And what was the group you said?
The King Singers.
Wow,
so they're British. And they were
sounds awesome.
Amazing. So I had all this weird music as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everyone was like, this is so weird. Who are you? Right? Listening to this on my little cassette Walkman. Because I would have... It would re-record it onto a separate cassette and put it in my Walkman.
See, my Walkman, I remember distinctly, I had Travis Tritt's first album, Country Club.
Mm.
That was my first tape. In 1989, I believe, maybe 1990.
I remember my first tape. It
yeah.
was Weird Al Yankovic, Bad Hair Day.
Yes, I still don't own that record, and that's a travesty.
It's a good one.
It's a great record.
Yeah.
My first cassette that I bought with my own money, Mo Money, Mo Problems.
What?
No way. See, you guys are a lot younger than me, I'm realizing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not a lot, but I'm probably like 5 years older than you
guys. That sounds about right, yeah.
So,
you're well into the beginning of the 80s generation, as opposed to we hit the tail end.
People
of my age that graduated when I did, I'll always call themselves 80s kids, were really not. We were kids in the 80s.
In the, right,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I was 8 when we hit 1990. So,
yeah.
It's I can't call myself an 80s. I wasn't wearing the neon and crap because, like, it wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no Flock of Seagulls haircut for me.
I think
but,
if you were at any point 10 in that decade... You're
that probably
that
sounds
you're,
right.
Yeah, we're at... My people are kind of at the end of that.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
So it means I missed a lot of terrible music, which is good.
Which is okay.
The only good things out of the 80s were, like... I mean, what? Like, Michael Jackson? Marillion?
Disco?
A little bit of
disco
Rush?
Was good.
Yeah, I mean, there's still
like
a little
disco.
Bit of... I'd like to think that the 80s are kind of when...
Little Public Enemy.
Electronic music kind of started to grow.
That's true.
But...
Roots of Hip-Hop?
Yeah, Roots of Hip-Hop.
I mean...
Yeah.
I just feel like we had a really cool run for our age of, like, what was going on in the 90s. I feel like that was the last time there was a real mix in terms of what was popular.
Yeah.
I would also say that the 80s are probably when Dungeons & Dragons really started to grow.
Look
you
at
see
that
what
segue.
I'm doing?
You look at
oh!
you like that segue? See, this is what it's like to be on the other side. I'm like, now I'm seeing, like, oh, that's how you're supposed to run an interview, right? You're supposed to make transitions.
In the beginning,
instead of your
I
awkward,
was going
hackneyed
to...
bullshit.
In the beginning, I was going to make fun of you because it's like, man, we were rusty after like a month and a half off, but that was good.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was good.
Let's keep tooting our own horn for the rest of this time.
Toot.
Oh, you are a tutor of horns, so you should be excellent at that. But anyways, back to
mouth
the
horn.
Wow. You guys are also good at
you
instruments.
Guys, you should do your theme music that way sometime. What
we
is
should.
That theme music from? So good.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
No way.
There you go.
Schmartians of the Schmalaxy.
Oh yeah, we didn't
case,
steal that at all.
Yeah,
don't
we're
worry.
Not using licensed music at all.
Nah.
It's from Schmartians of the Schmalaxy.
Well, we're not making money off this, so it's okay.
Not right? at all.
And you, if I think you get fair use up to like 20 seconds or something.
Yeah,
that's some,
great.
Yeah.
The rules are still murky on that, from what I understand.
Very murky.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but yeah, let's go back to D&D, which technically I think 1974, 1976 is when it was invented,
like
but
that.
It kind of took a while to grab a hold, and the 80s are really that
fun.
Time, they were fun, but it's that time when you kind of, you hear a lot of stories of people banning it because of Satanism.
Yeah, the satanic
yeah.
panic, man, is fascinating.
Yeah, and which kind of continued well into the 90s with Magic the Gathering, and...
Now, honestly... That was more my jam.
Same with me, yeah.
Yeah.
Magic, oh, Magic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sweet.
I was a Magic
guy. It was really
guy.
Weird because Keel was like, we're going to talk a lot about D&D, and I was like,
we'll
no, man, third, I came
now,
in right at the start of Third
Magic.
Edge, and from there, it was like, I ran that shit for, God, when did I get out? I can't even remember.
I've gotten in and out of Magic a few times in my life. Probably middle school was a time when I was most into it, and,
What was the set? What was the expansion at that time, do you remember?
I want to say I got out of it around the time of Mirage.
Okay.
I think that was the name of it. And then I got back into it a few years ago. I was still living in Texas, and there was a great little comic book shop called Dragon's Lair, and they would host, you know, the Friday Night Magic, and I had a friend who did it, and I was like, yeah, okay, let's get back into it. And it is amazing to me how much more alive the Magic scene is now.
Really?
It is. Like, they are making more money off of it now than ever.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Because, they're also, like, railing through. It's a pretty set schedule now in terms of when
Yeah,
stuff's
they've
out.
Done a really good job
it's
of...
It's a core set every year now or something?
Yeah,
it's
a core set every year. They put out, basically, a new expansion, I want to say, every month or every other month. Mm. But it kind of fits in with a set. And so they also rotate sets out for people who want to do tournaments. But at the same time, if you just want to collect cards and play against your friends, you can do that too. And it's they're doing it right. I gotta say, I try not to spend my money on it because I prefer like the LCGs that Fantasy Flight Games does. I don't want to spend too much time talking about it because we've talked about it on the show before. But they're
Magic?
No, LCGs. Those ones that I was talking about, we're talking about them with Lorraine a little bit on the last episode.
Oh, yeah, I haven't heard Lorraine's episode yet.
Where I'll explain it in brief, but you buy a core set. And it comes with every card that you... Like, every set has the same card. And then every expansion pack you buy is also the same cards. And it comes with three copies of every card.
Okay.
You don't have to go hunting down cards that you want. They just give you everything that they've made.
So you're not buying boosters with,
right.
like, the
and
randomness.
It's not luck-based. Yeah, it's just build a deck with everything that we've released so far. And it's a great system. But there's still, you know, there's still that fun of opening a booster and what did I get this
time? What can you do with it? Yeah, I mean, I think
So when did you get in and out of it?
Got in at Third Ed, so Ice Age was going on.
Yes, yeah.
And then Mirage came shortly thereafter, maybe a year or two.
I have the full list of all expansions.
Oh,
jeez.
I needed to know when, because I don't remember what expansion I came in on.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in on, which one was it? God, I just had it up. I came in on Invasion, the Invasion cycle, and
yeah.
I like stopped playing probably around, I'm looking at dates, probably around Shadowmoor.
Shadowmoor I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
That was like 2006, 2007.
How many expansions is there like
yeah.
a number on there?
There's no number, but it's just,
it's a long list.
I started playing like 1996, I
mm-hmm.
want to say.
So 96.
Like freshman year of high school, maybe 8th grade. Started playing a couple of my friends, big shout out to Zach and Matt. And Jake, what's up, guys? I'm sure you're listening to this.
What up, Zach, Matt, Jake?
Ice Age was out, and there was not, like, you know, paying an exorbitant amount of money to go back and get
right.
it. So you can get Third Ed, you can get Ice Age. Playing then, and then I think I stopped by like, 98, 99. I started, you know, I was dating this girl. Didn't really play
yeah,
as much,
yeah.
blah, 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 all that sort of mess. And then I went to college. Nobody was really playing at college. And then my senior year, I'm getting out of school. I'm still living in the area. My technical director at my theater is like, Robbie, you got to get back into Magic. I was like, dude, I'm not getting back. He's like, you got to get back into Magic. So I started playing a little bit. I went to Origins with him.
Mm.
And, like, did a tournament and stuff and, like, was terrible. Like,
yeah.
But, so I sort of brought all my cards out again and was sort of playing, kind of got in. You know, split a couple booster boxes with him, and like, and then
yeah.
I was like, maybe 4 months after that, I was like, no,
I'm done.
$500
yeah.
bucks, it's all yours.
Yeah.
And I like sold him everything, just got out.
That's great.
So it was like 2004 was the last time I played.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try not to play very much, but every once in a while, if there's a set that's coming out that looks interesting and I've got the time, I'll go to one of the release tournaments.
I think it'd be fun
which
to
are
try
fun.
That.
Which is, the format that I like to do is you go, I think you pay like $30, they give you 8 boosters, and you just build a deck.
Yeah, you have like the core set and
get.
A few
yeah,
boosters,
yeah, yeah.
and then you just...
And everyone just has a little tournament with whatever you got. And that, for me, is usually enough.
That'd
I don't need to
fun.
Buy anything more than that.
Yep.
It gives me a nice little flavor for the set, and then I'm done.
See, I think at this point, there's probably so many expansion rules and errata that I wouldn't know. I would be like, can I do this? Am I allowed? Can
what? Can I?
Are there more than five elements now? I don't even know. Like
honestly, I think they've managed to make the game simpler.
Wow, interesting.
Because I remember when I was playing in middle school, it was crazy. Instance, but there was also all sorts of other types of.
There's some crazy stuff going on.
The other cards, the ones that are like Instance, Interrupt. That's what they were.
Yeah.
They got rid of Interrupts completely.
Because they're essentially Instance.
Right.
In terms of how you...
With weirder rules attached to them.
Yeah.
They got rid of Banding, which was always a weird kind of thing
that nobody used.
Yeah. But they've kind of managed to make the game a little bit more... noob friendly, I want to say almost.
That's a
good way of putting it.
But while still keeping the complexity of all the different stuff that you can do.
See, that's the fun part for me was like figuring out what could work together and then having it all fall into place was like super fun.
Yeah, because the base system for the game is super easy.
And I'll say even beyond that though, and maybe again to kind of go a little bit meta to my whole nerdiness self is. D&D, Magic, most any of this stuff that I ever got into was because, like, that's where I could unite with friends.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, to me, I've always loved the social aspect of gaming, which is made for... Yeah, it's just, like, it's why I did it. You know, I was living in Albany, had a Greyhawk campaign going on with some friends, and then we started an Eberron campaign. It was like, I was having fun.
We'd usually
once every 2 weeks, we'd all gather in this guy's conference room where he worked, and we'd play, we'd order pizza, have a couple beers, and it was just fun. I came to New York, and I was like, Greyhawk, you can play Greyhawk character anywhere. I'll bring my Greyhawk character.
And Greyhawk is a D&D setting.
Oh, yeah,
living
Greyhawk doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was like... lived in like Gary Gygax's original world in a sense. And so I brought this character to Neutral Ground and I was like maybe I'll meet some people, I'll like make friends, other nerds. It just didn't work out that way at all. It was really hard. I mean, people were very angry at me for not like being super into the rules and knowing everything. I was I'll just take the time to look it up, or like, frankly, I just don't care. I'm here to hang out and have fun and tell stories. So I think D&D is probably like a D20 system in that sense is probably not best for me. I'm hoping to get more into get into a gaming situation where it's like, let's tell a story together.
Yeah.
And get creative and be nerdy in that sense.
Well, that's what I love. I mean, playing role-playing games, whether it's D&D or anything else, you can play it so many different ways. There's more story-oriented one where a group just has fun together, but there's also those dungeon masters that like to put together this incredibly difficult challenge that they just want to see if the players can get through, and it's fun to be maniacal and say, you didn't see that coming, did you? But it really, because it's so free-form, it can fit with any sort of group, as long as the group agrees on what that form is.
Exactly, yeah, and I hope I don't sound disparaging to people who are like rules Nazis. Because, like, if that's your thing, if you are a rules guy, girl, whatever, like, good on you. Like,
yeah.
There need to be rules, but yeah, it's just not my style of gaming. It's not, like, what I enjoy about it.
Yeah, which is why I really like that dungeon world, which I've talked about on the show before.
Yeah, it's keep talking about this. I gotta check this out.
It's super rules light, and I really highly recommend that to anyone who maybe wants to play something like D&D but is intimidated by all the numbers that are involved with it. And
it's so intense.
Yeah,
that's why I haven't gotten David my character sheet yet. I'm kind of lost.
So the idea, Robert and I have a mutual friend who wants to run a D&D campaign, and so we've kind of started making characters, but it's also, I mean,
I stalled because I'm getting confused and I don't want to admit it. So of course I admit it to the podcast. I almost fell into a World of Darkness game, which we rolled
I've
up
never
characters.
Gotten into that.
It looked to be really my jam to kind of do a transition. It can bring in elements of Lovecraft. And
yeah, it's because it's kind of horror-focused where there's, like, vampire, there's werewolf, and there's all sorts of other
and
aspects.
It's free-form in that way that you're talking about where the Game Master can bring it in the direction they wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
Our GM wanted to do that. He was like, I think it's going to be a little bit more mythos-based, which was like, yes, that's that. I would love that. That sounds like a blast. And then everyone involved just kind of petered off.
Yeah.
It really happened. that's the hard thing too. Like, especially living in New York, like, everybody's
tough to get people
busy
together
as hell, man.
Yeah.
We're all doing stuff.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain had a little brain fart right there. But you had just mentioned something right before Call of Cthulhu. Oh, the World of Darkness stuff,
mm-hmm.
the vampire. I never really got into World of Darkness because my only introduction to it was very LARPy.
Ooh.
And I never really...
You
like,
got
that's
to
a
share,
line. That's
can you
a
share
line
this
that
story?
I never, that's a line that I never crossed.
Can you share this story?
There's not really
why
much of a...
Why would you never want to LARP, though?
Ooh, it's a little... I don't know why. It's just that every nerd has their limit, I guess. And that's
like,
my limit.
I feel like LARPing is theater light. In a way that it's like, just, at this point, man, write a play. Like, just write
this,
a play.
At this point, man.
you know, it's, I mean,
but that's just me.
LARPing is just
I've
like improv, I guess.
It is.
Yeah.
It's improv.
Oh, man, maybe I, oh, God, I've been LARPing all this time and I didn't know it.
We have been. We've been LARPing minus the makeshift armor.
Wow,
yeah.
Sorry, what was your sidebar?
My sidebar is Geek & Sundry just released this hilarious new web series about LARPing. The first episode... It's only 2 minutes. It's like episode zero. It's
mm-hmm.
so funny.
I can't wait.
I'll check it out.
I just don't control my actions. Have I told you what to do yet?
I'm not one of the Corellia. Not yet.
Oh, shit. What'd I miss? Are we about to fuck up Noctis?
What? No.
We will if we must, for the good of the Noctis we once called friend.
Your friend Noctis stands before you.
Okay, I shoot him in the
Perfect.
Face.
What?
What? You've gone rogue. Biff's got to take you down. Evan, I shoot Noctis in the face.
Well, we don't want to kill him.
No? Oh. Okay, fair enough, yeah. I shoot him in the dick.
Christ. Sure you can hit a target that small? Look,
I think I just barely didn't finish the guild.
Oh, I love the guild.
I know, which is sad. Like, there's
the
no
guild.
Reason for me not to finish it. But...
Yeah, same. I remember, I think I got caught up to it at some point and then just never remembered
yeah,
to get
I think
back
that's exactly
it.
What
yeah.
happened to me.
It was a good time.
I love
though.
The guild. It's
it
so,
show.
It's so, like, I'm living the guild right now because I just got into Marvel Heroes.
Okay, you guys talked about this on an episode two episodes ago, and I was listening to it after I think I had just watched Captain America for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't hit me, but I'm just now catching up on the Marvel movies.
Hey, no problem. It took me a while to get back into them too. So
I was never a Marvel guy. So even when like Spider-Man and X-Men came
mm-hmm,
out, I was
mm-hmm.
like, I don't really care.
But you were telling me you're more of a Batman guy, right? What?
As long as it's not Superman.
I love Batman. So, okay, that's the other thing, too. Like, about
I've
that,
never
right before
Superman
I fell into being... Maybe this is part of why I stopped reading comics. Right before I became, like, big into, like, listening to music
mm-hmm.
and, like, buying albums and, like, learning more about music, I was reading comic books. I used to work at a television station. I would sweep their floors for $3 an hour. And I used all that money to go and buy comic books.
Nice.
And I subscribed to all the Bat titles and all the Super titles. Because one uncle, super into Batman. The other uncle, super into Superman.
Ah.
His kids, one of his kids, maybe both of them, but at least one of them, has a Superman tattoo on his chest.
Nice.
When my uncle was buried last year, they buried him in his Superman t-shirt. He was big into Superman.
Wow.
Nice.
But it was never like, you know, I'd read it and it was right after the death and life.
Hmm.
So, when he came back with the handsome long hair
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still to this day don't really remember why I read it. I read it, I kept up on it, never it didn't stick with me. None of those stories stuck with me because I just
yeah.
don't think he's my kind of superhero. Batman though, oh man. I freaking love Batman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just Superman, I don't know. I've never met a person who's been like, I love Superman. I don't know.
They exist. I mean, they're out there. That's
mm-hmm.
why he's
mm-hmm.
he is the. Isn't he credited with being the first superhero?
I think he's.
I don't know.
Would Action Comics be Action Comics number one be the origin of the idea of a superhero or no?
I think he is usually credited with it, but I want to say there were other
disputed
ideas that
like
were coming
Bob
up.
Like how Bob Kane
didn't
really. Batman?
Yeah, stuff like that. I mean, for all intents and purposes, yeah, Superman was the first.
Yes.
Yeah, the first that matters, you know?
It's kind of like how Namor is technically the first X-Men.
Right, yeah, that's
who's that?
Namor.
Namor
I've always pronounced it Namor, yeah, the Submariner. He was one of the members of the Invaders?
Yes.
Is that what they were called?
Yes.
Back
he's
when...
He's the Marvel version of Aquaman.
Yeah, basically.
Whoa,
back when,
really?
Back when the Marvel Universe was, like, World War II, mm-hmm. it was Captain America, it was Bucky, it was Human Torch, but not the Fantastic Four Human Torch.
Oh.
It was, like...
Johnny Hammond.
Yeah, it was
robot.
An android, a robot,
yep.
Yeah.
Really?
And the four... Was there one more member? Or,
that's it.
I think
the original...
Okay, that's it. And
the original
they
invaders.
The invaders, and they fought Nazis.
Yep.
And
then... Full of propaganda!
Yeah, basically.
You know, that history of comic books is so fascinating, and I'm looking forward to learning more about it. If you want to hear this dulcet baritone again, if you love comic books,
mm-hmm.
watch for in my voiceover work, I was commissioned to read a book by Paul Lopes called Demanding Respect: The Evolution of the American Comic Book.
Ooh.
So I'm going to have 10 hours of me talking about the evolution of the American comic book.
Wow.
Which I'm looking forward to finishing. It's a beast to record and edit your own work.
Yeah, so basically it's just going to be like an audiobook,
it's,
right?
Oh, it is. It is an audiobook.
Wow.
Yes, it is a there is a book that was released, I think it's by Temple, but it's an actual book. It's a scholarly text about comic books, and I'm doing the audiobook. So,
is this your first audiobook that you...
It's one of the first. It's probably it's definitely the longest.
Oh, wow.
Audiobooks are a beast sometimes.
They're
huge.
Oh, my gosh. I've done little, for lack of a better term, like self-help books about how to keep your apartment clean, living minimally, that sort of shit, and one on how to brew beer, which is a little kind of interesting, but other than those and a kid's book that I'm working on called Joe Sherlock, which is a lot of fun. It's like
that name sounds familiar.
Sounds,
I think I've heard of that.
It's cute as hell. I was surprised.
Is it a kid Sherlock?
It's a little kid, and he solves all the crimes on his street.
That sounds wonderful.
With his sister. His sister's actually really smarter than he is, but he doesn't want to admit it.
That's
I'm doing
adorable.
Joe Sherlock.
That's wonderful.
And it's the case of the headless mummy, which is a lot of fun, and it's a blast. But yeah, that's the next one that I'm doing.
I can't wait to listen. I'm probably going to listen to your kids one.
The kids one's really good.
And then
the book is really well written and
I would
funny.
Love to hear a comic book one. I like reading intelligent text about all this nerdy stuff that we love.
Well, that's the thing. And to kind of bring it back to what you guys were talking about, I love that that's what comic books were doing.
Mm-hmm,
very
mm-hmm.
They were commenting on the time, which is why I'm really curious to go back and, again, not being a Marvel person, recently learning about Civil War. And I want to go back and read it all because I have a feeling I would get a lot out of it as a recovered political junkie. I feel like they were really commenting on the times.
Yeah, I mean, it really does
ring
true with, gun control and privacy and all that sort of stuff that we are talking about today still.
It's like a Patriot Act question, from what I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
It was basically a Patriot Act.
That somebody
Act
was doing that, yeah.
It was a big event. Lots of things changed during the Civil War.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing there's no more changes on the horizon for Marvel.
Oh, never.
So we are recording this a few days after this news has come out that they are rebooting the...
It's not a hard reboot.
But they are basically combining everything from the Marvel Universe into something called Battle World?
Mm-hmm.
Which is
Worst title
it's
ever.
It's a terrible name, but I love the idea of... I love everything else about it.
You know, there was a Secret Wars... back in the day. Which
forever ago,
Which basically did the same thing in this one. The purpose of it, I think, is just to bring the Ultimate Universe into the 616.
So 616 is the number for the official Marvel Universe, for everyone that isn't a Marvel fanatic out there. And then the Ultimate Universe was one they created 10 years ago.
But it was
a
futuristic.
It was supposed
right?
to be a modern day retelling, be able to Spider-Man in the 2000s.
Or for people who are hey, I really want to get into Spider-Man, but look at all these back issues. Oh, I'll just start fresh with this Spider-Man.
Yeah, so Ultimate Universe did really well its first go around.
But then it just started to get just as complicated, and it started,
I don't think it was complicated. I think it was just... They ran out of good stories to tell with Ultimate.
You're probably more right.
Except for Spider-Man, because Spider-Man
pretty
much killed Peter Parker.
Yeah.
A buddy lent me Ultimate Spider-Man, and he's like, you gotta read this. And I still haven't done it. I think he gave it to me 4 years ago. It's still sitting on my shelf. Sorry, Steve.
If there's anything you should read from the Ultimate Universe, it's Ultimate Spider-Man.
See, Steve, you're right. If you're listening, he's a podcast guy too. Steve will listen to this. Steve, I'm sorry. I still have it.
Do it.
I promise. Steve. It's on my shelf. I will read it.
Steve, we'll duct tape him to the wall when we're done and force him to read it. Don't worry.
We'll record an audiobook and make him listen to it.
I will read it out loud for all of you and describe all the panels as we go.
Battleworld. That's the thing that's happening.
Is this the idea to like kind of bring in everything comic book wise so that they can capitalize on the fact that they have this massive audience they've built up through the films?
I think my main thinking is because there's so many offshoot titles right now that I think they want to do it so that they can cut down on the number of low selling titles.
That makes sense.
Because there are a lot of titles that are really good but don't sell but don't make money, which is understandable.
I want to say it's also a way to make crossovers able to happen more regularly with sort of a set way that they're going to happen. Almost like, okay, that sounds terribly confusing even to me. But, I mean, just imagine the Marvel Universe has created all these offshoot universes and blah, blah, blah. And
there's
every time something connects to something, there's always like, hey, I've invented this and we can travel here now. Well, I feel like Battleworld is kind of a way to put all of it in one tangible area that people can jump back and forth.
The other thing too is it's like there's been so much time travel shenanigans.
Oh yeah, I don't know
lately.
That
they're even the writers in each series has been like, whoa, like characters in the series go, we've been time traveling way too much, and like it's just like we need to stop this. So this is a way to fix it, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Plus, I feel like there's gonna be some Disney tie-ins as well. I think. Especially with the Infinity System, which I have not had a chance to play at all, but you basically, I've seen them at GameStop.
Oh, you're thinking about, like, total corporate synergy right
now. Oh, they have to. I can't believe
it. Of course they will, but, like,
I feel like this is the first step towards that.
They've got to do that.
Yeah.
It's really smart.
Plus, Star Wars number 1 just came out again for Marvel.
So good.
It was a lot of fun.
Darth Vader number 1.
Wait, they have it? They have that property?
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
because
it's
Disney.
Marvel is
Holy
Disney. So it's all connected.
That makes me not want to read it because of Disney's involvement.
It's great.
I know,
it's great.
Honestly,
at first I hated like Disney buying the Muppets and Disney buying Star Wars, but they're doing a great job with everything. You know, it's hard for me to hate on them.
I think it's just because they let their subsidiary properties just live and they just reap the financial benefits of it.
Hopefully. But yeah,
let's not talk about Star Wars 7 because I have too many thoughts on it.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. It's still too far off.
And I love Star Wars, but I think like the conjecture at this point is just like, guys, let's let Abrams make a movie and then pile on about it.
Yeah.
Or get really excited about it. Otherwise, in the meantime, the trailer was kick ass.
Yeah, it was a fun trailer.
It was so much fun.
Ben, just keep your mouth shut.
I'm just still sad.
The lightsaber controversy was fun for a day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's all move on.
Ben is sad that wiping out all the extended history. The extended
universe.
Yes,
I heard you say
novel.
That, and I remember hearing that on an earlier podcast.
Because I've read.
I never read them, so it doesn't
matter. I've read almost every single novel up till the Hung Zung Vong War, and I still don't know how to pronounce that alien race name to this day. But the Vong race, I read every single novel. All of Rogue Squadron.
Now, this is something, this kind of ties into, I kind of wanted to bring back to DC, because that's where I can talk a little
bit more intelligently.
But, not much more intelligently, but a little bit. And one of the things that I sort of liked about the DC universe, especially when I was reading, was that they had what they called the Elseworlds. Series where they would take the characters and put them in different times, like the whole like Red Sun plan of the Red Sun series of
Red Sun is always great.
It was really fun. It's like, what happens if Superman's in the Soviet
Union? In Russia, that'd be cool.
They did like, you know, these crazy things where like Batman was accused of being Jack the Ripper and like all this sort of like crazy stuff. It wasn't that good, but it was sort of
cool. Cool ideas, though. Oh, you know, I do remember seeing like a
Gotham by Gaslight.
Gotham by Gaslight, that's right.
And so they would do these things, and that was sort of fun because it was like, you know these stories, and the stories can live in this continuity, but then we can do this other stuff, and it's fun. And you can expand it that way. And it felt like that's kind of what I loved about how DC dealt with its properties in media, was that Gotham, I know Gotham's controversial. I really enjoy it because it feels like an Elseworlds story to me as somebody who grew up with this, but to somebody who's like coming at this from this, especially this post Marvel is consolidating everything world, it's like, what the hell is this? Like, that's not Batman. That's Batman as a kid? What? Mm-hmm. This is dumb. And so DC, it seems, is trying to, like, jump onto this bandwagon with this whole, like, the big announcement with Dawn of Justice, et cetera, et cetera. Everything from there. I think it's going to just flop. Because it's just it doesn't work that way. Also, Zack Snyder cannot tell a goddamn story to save his life. He's a beautiful film director. It's the stuff that the visuals are unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Holy
I'm
cow.
I'm making you throw up.
But he can't tell a story.
Can't. Well, I was just saying, the visuals in Man of Steel, just I was just like, oh my god, stop. Stop flying. Stop flying. Also, stop killing 2 million people. Stop it.
Yeah,
I was so confused when you're talking about throw up. I'm like, what are you talking about?
The visuals during the Zahn and
I'm just intense. It's all, but that's also, that speaks to the fact that he can't tell a story, because it's Zod and Superman hitting each other. And then there's Russell Crowe. And then they're hitting each other again. It's like, this does not invest me in this story in the least. It's destroying IHOPs and Sears in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I don't care. I just didn't care.
They destroy a big part of Metropolis.
Wow.
Lots of people in Metropolis died, and I don't know why. Like, no one ever brings that up.
Doesn't really happen. The best part of that movie was, what's his name? Christopher Maloney.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
I have not seen any of the modern Superman movies. I just cannot be brought to care.
You need to watch the Brandon Roth one, because that one is bad good.
It's bad good. Okay, I'll check it out if it's bad.
Okay, I was worried you were going to say, that's wonderful. No, it's bad good. It's really...
I can deal with bad good very, very easily.
Man. What's his name as Lex Luthor?
Yeah, Spacey.
Kevin Spacey.
I was curious to see that. So bad good. I'll check it out.
It's really bad good.
He just, like, he's chewing that scenery so hard. It's great. That's fun. But that felt right. Like, that felt like the right feel.
Yeah, yeah.
In that sense. But then again, like, it's just a terrible story. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Like, your conflict is that he throws kryptonite into the ocean and makes another continent? This is dumb.
Yeah, this is really stupid. What I wanted to go back to was in terms of, like, how you viewed DC. Someone told me this recently, and I can't remember who it was, but someone was telling me the difference between how you should view DC and Marvel superheroes, where it's, like, DC, it's about the legacy, which is why you have all these, like, New 52, Earth 2, all these other Justice Leagues. It's the legacy that anyone can pick up this kind of Superman mantle and be, like, that's why you have so many Superman and so many Flashes and so many Green Lanterns.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem is...
Was somebody on your podcast who said this? That sounds familiar.
It might have been.
Or you might have mentioned this on the podcast, but that sounds familiar.
But I think the problem is they've gone too far down the tree in terms of that stuff.
In terms of what people can remember. That makes sense.
Because they have... Because DC has Convergence coming up.
What's Convergence? What? I don't know anything about
DC,
what's going on in the DC world.
Like, like, Marvel Universe resets are never resets. They're just status quo changes.
Mm-hmm.
House of M... No more mutants.
Right.
Civil War. Avengers are all fucked up.
Yeah.
But DC, it's like, New 52, everything before, gone, we're in Prime Earth.
The last DC anything I really read was Crisis
on Infinite Earths.
It's the one where the other stretchy one in the DC universe.
The guy from Secret Six?
Maybe his wife died. Sue. Was it Sue Dibney?
No, it's not Secret Sue. I'm thinking of the wrong thing. I don't even
know. You're losing me.
I barely remember any of it, but yeah, it was just sort of a big, like, I didn't care.
DC is always just hard reset. Start at the top. Start bringing down the chain of different Wonder Women, different Flashes. When it gets too much, boop.
Yep.
Reset button.
See, I'm...
Crisis. Sorry, I just remembered.
Infinite Crisis.
That's the one.
Infinite Earth, I think, was like the 80s.
The first, for forever ago, Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, I'm sort of like dipping my toe back into actually reading comics.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
What grabbed me, I'm ashamed to say, is I heard that they were rebooting Lobo. And so I was like, I'm curious about that.
Don't be ashamed of that.
Well,
Lobo is great.
If you read the new Lobo, you would say...
I have not.
Because the spoiler alert, if you don't want to read the first two pages of Lobo 1 in the New 52, if you read those pages, you would know that it starts with whoever this Lobo is, killing the Lobo you know. And saying, you were never Lobo, you were an imposter, you're insane, and I am Lobo. It's very weird.
Great!
But it creates an interesting character. I kind of do like the character.
Yeah.
I'm read all four issues, and he's essentially going around taking out people who have been assigned the task of blowing up the Earth. So he's defending the Earth, but not because he gives a shit about Earth, just because that's his job, and he's a mercenary, and he's going to kill these people. So that's sort of interesting, like this idea of this code, the Lobo code, the mercenary thing. But it's not Lobo. There's no more Frag, and there's no more like dreadlocks and crazy hair and shit, which is a little disappointing because I liked that about Lobo.
You know, I only ever read one Lobo comic forever ago, and it was a team up with someone else who I don't even remember. But I remember really liking it. It was cool. It was fun.
He's crazy, yeah. But he's intentionally like, you know, where Lobo came from, right? It was like DC's answer. Like DC was making fun of Wolverine.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was
the whole point
of Lobo. Was like, everyone loves this Wolverine guy because he talks and he's a kind of an asshole. We're just going to make an even bigger asshole who's even crazier. And that's Lobo.
And then Marvel was like, you think that's crazy? There's this guy named Deadpool.
Yeah, who was based off Deathstroke. Is that who it's based off?
He's very Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was based off Deathstroke, but then they're just like, Deathstroke is too dark and dumb. Let's make a guy who breaks the fourth wall.
And it's just like a goofball.
Yeah.
Which, and now, from what I understand, he's a fan favorite.
Yep.
I love him.
That movie's coming out.
Yeah, it's
they're
gonna
doing
be
a
cool
Deadpool
movie.
Yeah. If it's not rated R, I'm not gonna watch it.
I think it's yeah.
The role he was born to play.
Can I say this? I think he was great as Hal Jordan.
You know, I don't think that I haven't really seen him do too many of the superhero movies. I don't think he was necessarily bad in any of them.
Oh.
I think they were all just terrible.
Oh, that film is like, again, same. It's the Snyder problem. It wasn't Snyder, but that movie is brilliant. It's beautiful. It's so gorgeous. I mean, again, as like an ancillary DC fan, like somebody who's not hardcore into it, but really dug it.
Yeah,
he looked like Hal Jordan to me. Like in my head, when I thought Hal Jordan, when I thought Sinestro, when I thought Kilowog, this is what they looked like. It was gorgeous. That story is I could have, in the eighth grade, have written you a better story. They just could not tell a story.
But
that's what it has to be.
I think that is what DC is very good at creating iconic characters and images.
Beautiful.
And being able to just show those magnificently on the screen. They do a really good job of
that. Gorgeous. But
whereas Marvel, I think, went a different direction and said, let's make things more realistic instead of...
This is the real world.
Right. Which I think, at first, for a lot of people, sometimes doesn't work, but they've done a good job of that.
They're great.
Yeah.
I saw the first half of Avengers for the first time yesterday.
It's a fun one.
I'm getting like working my way through the universe. I started at Guardians because I saw it was coming out in the film in the theaters, and I was like, was with my uncle, this uncle that got me into comic books.
Mm-hmm.
It's his fault, your fault, Uncle Tim. but you know, I was like, oh, let's go see Guardians, and I went. I was like, this is awesome. Vin Diesel's best acting role ever.
Yeah,
and it was so much fun, and I had a blast.
What's wrong, Ben?
Fast and Furious series is a great series of films. Right?
I've never seen them.
They're so great.
They look like bad good.
They're also bad good.
Yeah,
totally
absolutely
bad good.
You're not going to watch these and go, wow, I really love that script and that dialogue was magnificent. No. You're just going to go to the theater and have a good fucking time.
I just enjoy
yeah.
I just saw
good Fast and Furious
that Jason Statham trailer for Fast 7. And I was like, I love Jason Statham.
I love Jason Statham too.
Who doesn't? Like,
I'll
watch
it. Watch
this,
man.
This is one of the best movies ever.
I never saw The Expendables 3, but 2 was a ton of fun, you know?
They're all a ton of fun.
I didn't see any of them.
They're worth it.
That's the other thing that's like as somebody who's like into kind of the, you know, just like nerdiness in general, I can't be a film nerd because I'm so bad at seeing movies.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty bad about it, too. I've been going back and watching a lot of old kung fu movies
from
the 70s and 80s recently, which have been
Can you answer
bad,
this question for me? There was a kung fu movie that came out in the States, and it was like just this bad dub, or like a comedy dub of a kung fu movie. Do you know what it is?
When?
I can't remember.
Like how long ago?
Pretty long ago. I don't remember what it is. If someone knows it, please tell me.
Please submit.
Sure, like us on Facebook and write a thing on
put it in the comment
thing.
Section.
Because I don't know how to use Google. I could easily Google this, but I only remember it at specific times.
I mean,
times.
That's not a lot of specific information.
One of the characters goes, wee, wee, wee. That's her dialogue. Okay,
somebody,
that's her dialogue.
Somebody's going to write in with
this.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Kung Pao Enter the Fist?
Is it Kung Pao Enter the Fist?
Okay, so you've got this a little bit wrong, but mostly right.
That's
it's
a new film.
It's pretty old. I want to say like about at least 10 years old.
Oh, but I mean, like it was a 1970s Kung Fu craze film.
But he took an old movie, filmed some other stuff, spliced himself into the footage of this old movie.
That sounds like what that was.
And
it's the same
guy.
About it.
It's the same guy who did like Thumb Wars, and he'd do all these little spoofs where it was just upside down mouths with eyes drawn on the chins, and he just did like these stupid little like fun.
It totally is Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Yeah, that's a great movie. I think it's a...
I don't know how I didn't... That answer in my head seemed too easy.
That, for me...
Like, it's not Kung Pao Enter.
That is a criminally underrated movie, I think. A lot of people hate it, but it is just goofy, silly fun.
Sometimes that's what you need.
That's what you need, exactly.
It's just what you want.
And it, you know, those old Kung Fu movies, some of them, they have a good time with those movies. We watched one called... Against the Drunken Cat Paws or something like that, where I had a few different translations of this title, but it's a woman who's like trying to get revenge on her father, but she's so depressed and she's constantly drinking, and so she's mastering like that drunken fist style of Kung Fu, and there's all these little side characters that come in that all have just their weird quirks, but their own styles of fighting. Like, you've got the big strong guy who's dumb, and you've got the smart detective who just uses their cane and, like, tricks people with the kung fu, and it's just a blast. I love seeing stuff like that.
Kung Fu Hustle.
Oh, Kung Fu Hustle! That was a great one, too.
Oh, so funny.
And Shaolin Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, like, intentionally goofy comedies.
Yeah.
You just gotta live in the world that you know you're living in.
Exactly.
If you can do what you're setting out to do, then you're gonna succeed. Like, we're gonna have fun with this genre and make fun of it. That's where we are.
That's where we are in this world.
So Robert had been telling me about this comic book. I want to go back to Lovecraft a little bit here.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been rereading a lot of Lovecraft's old stuff, reading the ones I never first read. And, you know, honestly, he's got a ton of amazing, great ideas. Sort of dry writing sometimes. It can be a little difficult to slog through, but really, really creative stuff. And
shug off through?
Yeah.
But up it's...
And, you had recommended a comic, Neonomicon, by Alan Moore, which is kind of taking a lot of these concepts from Lovecraftian mythology, from the mythos, and putting kind of a new spin on it. And it was really cool. I don't necessarily recommend it for everybody out there because it's got some...
It's terrifying.
Yeah, some terrifying stuff. Some
deals with some adult themes.
You're easily triggered.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, trigger warning on that one.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, to kind of like, I think what I told you about it that I actually was really interested in was how Moore used the comic book form to fill in the gaps that Lovecraft left, which I think is a really fascinating approach to dealing with. I mean, who doesn't have a mythos story? Like, I'm ashamed to say I've never read King, except for Jerusalem's Lot, which is it's in the mythos.
Right.
So every horror writer goes there. So I think it only makes sense that somebody like Moore needed to put his imprint on the mythos. And to do it his way, which was just, again, terrifying and, but brilliant.
Well, I think especially, it's always interesting to me to see something that, I mean, the mythos has been around forever, and you've got tons of modern writers who kind of put their own spin on this Lovecraftian psychological horror stuff, and more recently, in recent years, it's gotten bigger and bigger, like thanks to True Detective, and... there's the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, which is this online group that puts out their own, you know, low-budget movies and stuff.
Really want to go to Neonomicon, or Necronomicon.
No. Oh, yeah. The convention.
Yeah.
I've never been to any. I feel like that might be a little
creepy.
It
just started,
but...
last year, and I was like, man, who are the people who go to this?
Ooh.
I don't know that I want to hang out with them, but holy crap, how much fun would this be?
It would be a great time.
It's not far. It's just improvised.
But I love that. I mean, it's gotten big enough that it's gotten the attention of, like, Alan Moore, who, you know, when Alan Moore writes about something, it's always putting a new spin on things that we maybe have never seen. And so we're getting a lot more into this psychological horror stuff as opposed to the more Saw-oriented.
Yeah,
and I'm glad.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm really glad that we're moving away from that phase in horror.
Yeah.
I started to move into, like, liking horror because of Saw. And I liked the ideas of the first film. This, I like the twist in it is cool,
right?
Like, but like the, you know, the other stuff in it, like the torture porn aspect of it,
right,
was just like, eh.
But it does have some great ideas. Like, you're locked in and you have terrible choices to make. What do you
exactly
do? Right.
And that sort of stuff is very interesting. And that lack of knowledge, like, to me,
mm-hmm,
that is the brilliance of Lovecraft, and what I love when people pull that out. And that's what they focus on is, you know, the famous, I can't remember the name of the essay, but that opens with something, I'm paraphrasing because I'm not that good at remembering these things. The oldest and strongest emotion of humans is fear, and the oldest and strongest type of fear is fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so that's why, even with all of his, like, racist, sexist bullshit,
yeah,
where what made for really good horror out of his xenophobia and his racism and his
mm-hmm
him being terrified
very
of women
sexist,
is
yeah
he's... He, because he was so afraid of this thing that he didn't
mm-hmm
understand, and that's what made cosmic horror. So how do we then take that from a place of xenophobia and racism and fear of scientific advancement that was going on in the early 20th century for somebody like Lovecraft into now? And you're right, True Detective did that well, bringing in the Chambers, Yellow
mythos, King, yeah, yeah.
That sort of stuff is a really smart way, I think, to approach a world that we're living in now where the future is feeling, once again, incredibly vast and uncertain, and
yeah,
what the hell is going on?
Oof. Deep stuff.
Can
yeah
I just say,
deep
I just
stuff
played, I was watching a Wii Play series, and they were playing Slender the Arrival, but I can't play horror games. Let me just...
Yeah, we talked
just
about horror games a little bit before.
Default.
They're tough.
I can't play a horror game.
Tough for me.
You
they
guys
scare me.
About Resident Evil
life
and Silent Hill
so
stuff.
Much.
Never seen them. It was never a PC game, or never a console gamer, really.
Oof. I tried Slender the Arrival, and I literally almost shit myself.
Is it a PC game?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna check. Is it on Steam?
Yeah.
I might have to check
it
out.
I
downloaded Amnesia, and I played, I got to a point where I couldn't get past something, so I was like, I'm done with this, because
I heard
it
about Amnesia.
It's
about
pretty creepy.
Too.
Yeah.
It's ambient, and I like that. That's fun.
Isn't it like you can't actually fight?
Oh yeah,
you have to run away and hide.
If you see them, you're essentially dead.
Yeah,
but that's like, to me, that's an interesting way to play a game.
And
there's Alien Isolation, which is
I heard
a
is
great
terrifying
game.
Yeah.
I played a demo, and I also almost shit myself. That fucking xenomorph is smart as shit. It knows where the fuck you are all the time, and it's ugh.
Well,
it's terrifying.
I like that sort of approach.
Yeah, and I love Alien. I love the Alien series.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I gotta see the first. I know I need to see it.
It's
I know.
Fine.
Tyrus, we're watching that soon.
God.
Tyrus,
did you put out a new Alien game? Like a board game, a card game.
Oh, I was about to say.
Really?
I just talked about
yeah,
that.
Well, there's this game called Legendary, which is a Marvel deck-building game where you kind of have these options of what you can buy on your turn and make your army stronger.
Is it Magic-esque, or is it more like your
LPG? It's more of a deck
builder.
It's more... So deck builders kind of means two different things nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, Magic is where you... take a
CCG,
deck ahead of time.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
CCG. You
CCG.
Have a deck that you built ahead of time that you go into battle with. Dominion is a more modern game that has kind of created a deck building within the game where everyone starts with the same sort of base pool.
Okay.
And over time you pick the cards you're going to add to your deck and you keep shuffling so they come up and yeah. And there's a cooperative Marvel one which is supposed to be pretty good. I haven't actually played that. And they just came out with an Alien one which is a cooperative one that's supposed to be even better. Really makes you feel like there are aliens coming after you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I could get down with that.
But to tie that back into role-playing games a little bit, since we've been talking about Lovecraft and horror, the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game.
Want to play it? Never played it.
Oh, we are going to have to make that happen.
Let's
do
this.
That was always one of my favorites when I was playing pen and paper RPGs in college, because my sort of understanding of role-playing games had always just been D&D.
Yep.
You're a wizard, you fight it, you know, you launch a fireball at a troll.
You're
a
wizard.
Yeah.
You're wizards.
You're a warrior and you go flash at something. And when I played Call of Cthulhu, it was very like, oh, that is not what this is at all. This is all about investigation and something is going
mm-hmm.
on and you have no idea what it is and you just see these snippets of stuff that's happening to you and then this great horror shows up and it's unspeakable and you go slightly insane from what you've seen, but even then you don't have the whole picture, and the more and more you play, your character is just sort of going more and more insane and losing control of themselves and their grip on sanity.
See,
and
that's
good
fun.
Stuff.
That sounds
and
fun.
And that's one of those things that
let's play this.
You can't capture in a in a video game quite as well. I'm sure you can. People are getting better and better at capturing those sort of RPG
Amnesia
feelings.
Uses that. They use the you have sanity points. The level that I'm stuck on, and it's not like I'm not good enough. It's just like I literally can't figure out what's next. I should just like watch a walkthrough and get beyond and see what else they do. Mm-hmm. But it's at a point where there's like this invisible thing that's coming for you. And so you're tossing pieces of bodies to distract it. To go to try and get through. So I just can't figure out what to do next. I'm like at a gate and I'm like, how the hell do I get through this gate? Using those sorts of things of like this terror, it's all about sound, it's all about atmosphere. I really enjoy that approach to storytelling. A friend of mine that I met recently was telling me how he loves video games because he feels like this is a new way to tell stories in a way, an interactive way to tell stories, and he got me thinking about how Amnesia works in that mm-hmm. horror realm. How do you tell a horror story with an engaged audience?
I think that's why you're seeing like a big point and click reemergence. Mm-hmm. Like Tales of Monkey Island is coming back, you have the whole Walking Dead games coming out, and the Game of Thrones, which are all just point and click games where you're trying to explore a story given options, which is why I think that's a great genre.
They've made it very open ended and given you a lot of little puzzles to solve in the middle. And
I'm going to need to get some suggestions from you guys on like ones I should be checking out. As if I need something else to distract me from what I'm supposed to be doing in my life.
I love those classic point and click Monkey Island, Sam and Max type games.
For some reason, I was on like the Myst Wiki for like 2 hours the other day because I was just like, I was trying to remember what happened in all the missed games.
Well, you guys talked
them.
About it with your fourth guest, which means your fifth episode, Chris. You talked.
Yeah,
about
I do remember talking about missed a little bit. Yeah,
that might be
I just
why
remember.
It popped up.
I went through all the wikis and just was trying to remember. Okay, what happened to Star? Okay, I remember this guy, and then I just remembered how crazy and convoluted the whole thing got. It was great.
I played it. I think I played played it for about a half hour. And was just like, it was at a point, I think it was like right about to take the SATs or something.
Ooh,
So I just was like, I can't deal with this right now. And then I didn't come back.
I remember the first time I tried to play it, it was just too open-ended for me. And I was just like, I don't even know what, I don't even have
a
goal.
I'm a kid, I need directions.
I didn't even have a goal. And so I just never was engaged from the beginning. Until later I sat down, I was like, okay, let's really give this a try.
I think as an adult, that's the sort of thing you're like, whoa. It's just, wow. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Very well. Like, I mean, there's a reason they were so big. Nothing else like it had really come out. Yeah.
Oof. While we're on the topic of old video games, the old Star Wars games are coming back.
Which? Oh, on from GOG, right?
GOG. Yes, they're releasing Rogue Squad or X-Wing, Fighter. What's the one with Kyle Katarn? Dark something.
I never really played any of those PC Star Wars games. The only Star Wars game
I'm
ever.
I'm foaming at the mouth.
He is literally.
Another reason I want to get a PC. And I was telling Kia before, I only play one game on PC right now, which is Marvel Heroes. But my rig, it's not a rig; it's an iMac.
Yeah,
you can't call that a gaming rig.
No, see, that's what would stop me from doing it. It's just like, I can't make that investment.
Yeah, I'm about to.
The time investment.
Man.
I'm about to.
Spending so much time and money on video games.
TIE Fighter.
You know what?
X-Wing. Oh, my God.
One of my favorite pieces of life advice I ever got is there's nothing better than what you like.
That's true.
And so, like,
that's
if
true.
You love playing games, God damn it, play
then
games
do
like a mother trucker.
You hear that, audience?
Do it.
Do it.
That's why, like, I finally convinced myself that it was okay to read a couple of comic books every now and again.
Yeah,
like
you absolutely should.
I just picked up A Court of Owls.
Court of Owls?
The first, it's the New 52 reboot of Batman. It's the first story they started with. And I had read Zero Year, which was like another story. It was later on in New 52. But I'm like, you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to start reading Lobo. Oh, and The Secret Six? This looks interesting. I'm going to get this. I'm going to spend my $2.95 right now. And I'm going to feel okay about it. Maybe I won't buy a coffee later, but I'm going to buy this damn comic book. I don't care how broke I am. I feel good about this.
I never realize how much like money is outgoing when I buy comics.
Yeah.
It's really bad because everything's like $3.99, $4.99.
Yeah.
You don't really think about it.
Until you get to
until
the
end.
Until
you buy 15 at once.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean $48.99?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No, this is only $2.50. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
what
but there's 14 of
Oops.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'm grabbing a couple titles here and there. I started reading Arkham Manor, which looked like an interesting little Little side thing. I don't think it's going to be a. I actually know nothing about it other than like, oh, this looked cool.
Yeah.
But basically, Arkham has been moved into the Wayne Manor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I for some reason this just jumped back into my head. It's a Batman story from at least like maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. Batman Year 100. By, I think, Paul Pope?
Oh, wow. No, I never read that one. Was it good?
Yeah, it was like a 4-issue miniseries of just him as this old, old, old man who doesn't really know what he should be doing anymore.
Wow.
And it's fun stuff. Again, kind of like that Elseworld stuff that you like. It might be a good one for you.
Frank Miller sort of started that whole thing with Dark Knight Returns. Like,
Yeah.
It's like, let's look at Batman as an
That's
old
true.
Man.
Yeah, it was very similar to Dark Knight Returns, but it went in a different direction. Yeah.
The one thing that I want, DC, if you're listening to Nerd Roots.
They are.
Please.
They totally are.
Please bring back John Paul Valley. And please bring back Azrael. I loved Azrael.
Everyone loves Azrael.
Which one was John Paul Valley?
Really? Is that true?
Everyone like
I thought it was just me.
Everyone on the down low. Everyone on the down low.
I loved that idea. Okay, so remember when Batman got his back broken by Bane,
yes,
that iconic,
yes.
like, break you thing?
Yeah.
So, Denny O'Neil had done this really great thing where he introduced Bane and introduced this character of Azrael leading up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this kid living in Gotham who had been trained by this ancient Catholic order to be an avenging assassin named for the Angel of Death, Azrael. And this kid, John Paul Valley, finds out that his father was Azrael. His father dies on his doorstep and says, "You are Azrael." And he's like, what? He's a slubby computer programmer.
Huh.
He's just like a slubby kid. But you find out he had this like system, they call it the system. He had been like had this training implanted in him since birth. So he becomes the avenging angel Azrael. But he starts to fight against that training so he could be like fit more into like kind of the Bat family because he's trying to be good about it. So when Batman gets his back broken, John Paul Valley gets tapped to be the Batman. So Jean-Paul Valley was Batman for a while. So those big bat suit mech thing.
Yeah.
That was all,
I remember seeing all that, but I never really knew
what that was.
So then,
you know, he kind of loses his mind. He lets some guy die. He was a very un-Batman.
Mm. Yeah, very un-Batman. But this is also what Azrael looked like as Batman.
Oh, wow.
So great.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
God.
That's when I really started to read.
Height of the 90s.
Yeah.
When I really started to read was right when that happened. Batman, I think, 400? Maybe 600. I think it was 400. So, after Bruce Wayne comes back, kicks him out, blah blah blah. He still tries to like be a good guy, but he's like this very like what you want to be versus what you've been trained to be sort of struggle. And so Azrael was this. I loved the character.
That's
he
a
got
great
his
concept.
Own title in 0 year or in 0 hour. I think they started him and. Then they eventually killed him. There was this other guy who had been trained by... He was a cop.
McLean and another all these...
Yeah, he was trained... He was a cop trained to possibly replace Batman by the GCPD. And he became Azrael for a while. But then he's... I think he's in the New 52, right? He's had an appearance.
Yeah.
From the... I did a little research before I came because I was like, I gotta
talk
about Azrael, but I gotta know what's going on.
Azrael,
I'm worried I'm gonna get into this room with these guys and I'm gonna sound like an asshole. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Azrael had a really great mini cameo in Arkham City, the video game.
No way, really?
Yeah. Mini cameo.
I'm gonna go on YouTube and watch this because I just love that character.
Very small cameo. So great though, and I'm really excited for Arkham Knight.
Oh, is this a new
the third one? Completing
new video game?
Yeah, the completing the Arkham trilogy.
So, okay, what was it? It was Arkham Origins?
Arkham Origins. It starts on the I thought Arkham Origins was terrible.
I honestly don't know.
Okay, so Ben does not like Arkham
Origins. Well, the only reason I didn't like Arkham Origins is because once you got the shock gauntlets, it was OP.
Oh, totally. We all know about the OP shock gauntlets.
Yeah.
Don't need to tell me twice.
Yeah. Stop making fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you, man.
Yeah, you are. You're making that face.
Just give me some shock gauntlets.
No.
I'm all good.
That face is scanning real well on the podcast.
Okay, so go ahead, Ben. Sorry,
so
I didn't mean to interrupt.
It goes Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Arkham City. Arkham Knight. Main trilogy. Arkham Origins.
It was like a warm-up.
Arkham Origins was the third game to come out.
Oh, okay, never mind that. I don't know anything about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Stop giving me that face.
What face?
You're giving me the face.
Listen, the folks at home cannot see my face, so as far as they're concerned, there's no face. We're just disembodied
voices. Love
the
audio medium.
We're just disembodied voices.
If a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it,
mm-hmm.
does it fall?
Ooh, but what if it's summer and not fall?
All right, ladies and gentlemen.
And put a rim shot right there. You need to.
All right. And on that note,
yeah,
I'm going to stop talking.
I think
about.
That's a perfect moment to drop the mic. And
do you want to literally pick it up and drop it?
Yeah, sure. We don't need this thing again. We're done,
no,
right?
Done. I have broken the podcast.
I mean, I feel like we touched on, is there any other aspect of nerdiness that you feel like you did not get a chance to
I am so excited you guys asked me to talk about anything at all. I'm a professional dilettante.
Uh-huh.
So the fact that anybody would care that I'd say anything about anything at all is... because I can't speak with it, you probably heard, I can't speak with authority on any of this stuff. I'm just kind of like, ooh, I like that. Every once in a while, that distracts my attention every now and again.
That's how most of us are. You know,
yeah.
We maybe have one or two things that we try to become experts on, but there's always somebody that knows more than we do.
Yeah. The key
all
is.
All we can do is enjoy it.
As they say in improv, fake it till you make it.
Fake it till you make it.
You're an expert in something until someone tells you you're not.
There we go.
That's all I know from improv.
I'm really good at pretending I know what I'm. Or sounding like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, hopefully I faked
just
it
did.
Well.
Right?
Yeah.
You guys have no idea if I know any of what I just said.
It could have been all lies.
I do, though.
You sound like an expert. You sound like you know what you're talking
about. There's been a lot
expert.
Of wasted hours on Wikipedia and like just reading.
Ben is wearing a Hail Hydra shirt for the podcast, so I knew that those were your bona fides when I came in.
Well, I guess that's it then. Robert, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
We want to make sure to plug your podcast, Dan. Go see a show.
GoSeeAShowPodcast.com. I'm also on the iTunes the way these gents are,
mm-hmm,
so you can
mm-hmm.
find it there.
We should get a website.
Yeah, you know, go like us on Facebook, and go see a show like them on Facebook as well. And you guys have a website?
Yep, GoSeeAShowPodcast.com.
Great.
And all the links are there. We'll have to get
you
on, Kia. And Ben, you said you do improv, right?
I do.
We'll have to do an improv show. I've never really gone to the improv scenes, but that's part of the indie theater.
I guess we should plug what we've been doing most recently is our Law and Order Suggestion Victims Unit, which we should have some shows coming up pretty soon. But we and our group of friends, we all we get two letters from the audience, and we turn that into an episode of one of the lesser known Law and Order franchises that
such as the Scuba Squad.
Yeah, we did Scuba Squad. We had Accident Unit.
Accidental
something.
Sudden Accidents.
Sudden Accidents.
Sudden Accidents.
What
was the other one the other day?
So that when you say two letters, you literally mean like
we get
initials.
Somebody's initials from the audience.
Oh, that's incredible.
And then we just make it something.
Yeah.
And
what are your initials, Robbie?
RG.
RG.
The
Robot Gore Squad.
Yeah.
Something like
the
that.
The Rowdy Gunman
the
Squad. A bunch of cops who are rowdy.
And the thing is, there's seven of us. We all just, like, take turns building exactly what it's going to be together. So we never even know until
we have no idea.
It's funny you bring that up because I listened to the episode with Chris Musta on my way to my first ever background gig on SVU. I'd never done background before, and I went and did SVU. But on my walk there, my hour-long walk to Massbeth, I was listening to your
episode.
Those
are great Law and Order background gigs.
Yeah.
They're so often.
That's my
They're so often. They're such
I
a good
I'd never
way
done
getting,
it before. It was a lot of fun.
I'd love to do
so watch
point,
for me right behind the detectives on their Gamergate episode.
Oh,
because they're doing a Gamergate episode.
Oh, God.
Yep.
No, you can't be serious.
No, I am very serious.
If there
episode
is a
16,
thing,
14.
If there is a thing that exists, Law and Order will make an episode out of it.
Yep.
I'm just, it's so dead. It's dead. Let it die. We're over it, and I'm tired.
I don't think people are over it, though. That's the thing.
No,
people love
show will just
detective shows. They love
the
murder porn.
I'm talking about Gamergate. Not
that.
I'm talking about Law and Order. I'm talking about Gamergate. Let it die.
I know. It's at some point, it feels like we're feeding the trolls.
Exactly.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know.
It does.
If you talk
it's,
about
it's
it,
it's such
deal.
Important stuff to deal with.
It is.
Really, and I'm glad it's being dealt with. It's almost like it needed to blow up in order for people to get a little serious about it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's nobody that sides with the idiots.
But there
are. You're
because
right.
There are those idiots.
There's,
they're out
that's
there.
The reason there was the...
That's the whole reason
that's
it's
the
a
reason
problem.
It exists. You're right.
Which is so awkward.
But,
so it's good that, like...
But
you're
I think
right.
when
good.
You put it into a larger light, there are more people, I would say, that disagree with them.
And hopefully, like, by doing so, we can, you know, shine enough light so that all those shadows of where those, like, little idiot trolls hide... They can't hide anymore. hopefully.
It was such a bad time. I was ashamed to tell people that I play video games and then
That's the hard part is, you know, like you start to be, people don't know anything about the culture and then they assume that like you are the culture. It's like, well, no, I mean, there's cultural problems around everything.
It
like,
goes back to the satanic stuff with D&D.
Oh, God,
when it was coming out. Exactly the same. Like, the more people talk about the negatives, the more it represents the culture.
Are there
a bunch
of weirdos out there who are using this to, like, do something, to, like, feed their insanity? Maybe.
Probably.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
But if it weren't this game, it would be something else.
Yeah.
You know,
weirdos are going to be weirdos.
There are
no
weirdos
what.
Everywhere, man, that do all sorts of weird things.
Yeah.
Not just nerdy things.
So that's a good
stopping
point.
Yeah.
For real.
Way
now.
To bring it down, Ganyo.
So, on that note about weirdos doing weird things no matter what.
Hey, again, nothing better than what you like.
Exactly.
Do what you love and don't be an asshole about it.
Yep.
Do what you love. That's great words to live by. Do what you like. Don't be an asshole about it.
Yeah.
Thanks again,
guys. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. And thank you, listener, for listening.
If you made it this far.
As always, I have been Kia.
I have been Ben.
And we will try to remain being those people till next time.
Until the next episode of Nerd Roots, ladies and gentlemen.
Ooh, goodbye.